This is Double Play, a baseball podcast. Here's Dustin Sweetelson and Adam Burke.
All right. Another edition, Double Play, a baseball podcast. I'm Dustin Sweetelson alongside my guy, Adam Burke. As baseball season continues to roll on, we're starting to get a clearer picture of who some of these teams are. There's stories all over the place. On this episode, we have to touch on some of the news surrounding this week in the sport, but also have to run some things by my guy, Adam, because when it comes to analytics, nobody's better than him. So I have questions about whether what I'm seeing with my eyeballs, ocularly, my favorite word, ocularly, I have questions about whether there's some truth or some falsehoods behind it, because I need to know what the analytics say. But without further ado, welcome in my guy, Adam Burke. Of course, you know him as VSiN's managing editor, also our lead baseball analyst. For those of you who don't know, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I produce co-host Sharp Money weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern over on VSiN as well. Adam, another weekend is in the books. How are we feeling?
Yes, sir. It's good. Anytime you get more data points, you know, that kind of help point you in the right direction of where some of these guys are going, especially on the pitching side. It's definitely a good thing. So, you know, a little bit of a slow start on the betting side to the season, but, you know, every day adds more and more data, and we got a rare Monday here with all 30 teams in action. So, you know, we're starting off the week on a high note.
Well, the reason all the teams are in action today, Adam, is because it's Jackie Robinson Day, and something I remember going way back when it first started, 1997. I mean, I don't have to tell the Jackie Robinson story if you're listening to this podcast. I feel like you should be pretty well aware of what he accomplished, what he did for baseball. But if you think about it for a moment, if that never happens, I mean, of course, integration eventually happens, but when it happens, that time in American history and the way it allows things to progress through the times, baseball would look very different today. Everything would have been delayed severely. And think about this from the perspective of all the Latin American stars we have in baseball. I'm not sure it would be as prevalent as it is today if it wasn't for Jackie Robinson, aside from all the other mixes of people coming together to play the sport. I think that's one thing that jumps out to me when I think about today.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, you know, the guy certainly was a trailblazer, no doubt about that. And I think it's good that Major League Baseball honors him, remembers that part of their history, and, you know, does so with such a prominent card, as you mentioned, with, you know, all 15 or all 30 teams in action, 15 games here today. You also get the Patriots Day game in Boston. So the Guardians playing at 8:10 a.m. kind of reminds me of Sundays when I get to watch the Browns at 10 a.m. where, you know, you gotta start drinking really early, which, again, I'm kind of used to on Sundays, but, you know, it's a little bit different out here. The one thing I will say, I don't want to diminish anything that Jackie Robinson did because, you know, obviously we know how legendary he is, but the Indians organization has asked Major League Baseball multiple times, like they do it on an annual basis, to be able to all wear 14 to honor Larry Doby, who broke the color barrier in the American League. And Major League Baseball has always said no.
Oh, that's weird.
Which blows my mind.
That's a weird move, especially just because that's your guy, American League. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know why they wouldn't want to focus on someone else who broke barriers as well. That you know what gets lost, though, in a lot of this to me, Adam, is we talk about what Jackie Robinson did, and it's incredible, but I think we lose sight of how awesome of a baseball player he was. Like, he was, and I know he's a Hall of Famer, but I think sometimes because we talk about the trailblazing, we don't realize how well he performed with all the pressure on him, and not everyone's built for that.
No, it's an excellent point. I mean, career 313 hitter, rookie of the year, won an MVP, you know, a guy that, you know, look, also, you know, when we think about the mental side of baseball, right? I mean, baseball is, again, it's a game that is built on failure. You know, you are going to fail far more often than you are going to succeed. And the mental side of baseball is really, really challenging. Now, imagine throwing in everything with Jackie Robinson, not just what he was facing externally from, you know, racist fans and, you know, racist owners around the league and all those kinds of things, but also his own teammates that didn't fully, you know, embrace and respect what he was doing. To put up the numbers that he put up, you know, excuse me, in the face of that. Yeah, that's really, really incredible. And, you know, I mean, again, for those that I will say, obviously, it's sensationalized a little bit because it's a movie and it's going to be. But 42 is a damn good movie.
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. The depictions are really well done. When you're doing a timepiece like that, you have to feel like you're really back in there. It reminds me of a clip I just saw from a movie that's coming out or came out placed in the 80s. And someone messed up and forgot to remove the Ring doorbell from the house they were using as the house in the movie. But like a movie's got to feel like you're back in that place and time. And it felt like the 40s. It felt like that time and that era. And even the baseball looked right. The stadiums looked right. The way the players threw, because they used a lot of like players that actually tried out that were more baseball players than actors in the background. Everything about that movie is pretty spot on.
Yeah, it really is. And for those who have never gone, I mean, my wife and I are huge barbecue snobs, so there's a lot of reasons for us to go to Kansas City. And Kauffman Stadium is pretty cool, too. I mean, for being an older ballpark, it's been kept up really, really well. But the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City is fantastic. I mean, it is extremely well done. It's a really, really cool place. Obviously pays a ton of respect to, you know, not only people like Jackie Robinson, but the other Trailblazers, you know, in the Negro Leagues, and including some of those that, of course, you know, went on to the major leagues as well. Also, the World War I Museum in Kansas City, which is pretty cool. But if you're looking for something to do here, I know that, you know, the kids are going to be winding down the school year here soon and all of that. Trek to Kansas City, you know, to go check out the Negro Leagues Museum is very much worth your time.
Sidebar, not baseball for one moment. Your wife's from the South. You're from the Midwest. Yep. Kansas City barbecue, known for ribs. Where your wife's from, known more for pulled pork, obviously brisket in the mix. I need to know the power rankings when you go to a barbecue restaurant, like the top two or three things you have to order.
Ooh, well,
Sophie's choice, I know.
Yeah, this is definitely a difficult one. So I will say, because my body hates me, brisket gives me horrible indigestion.
That's all the pepper.
I eat it anyway. Yeah, it's like the smoke and, you know, all the spices and stuff that go on the outside. I definitely eat it anyway, and I'll eat burnt ends, you know, I mean, because why wouldn't you eat burnt ends? I am a pulled pork guy first, brisket second, ribs would be third. See, ribs to me, there's not enough ROI. Like, it is a pain in the ass to eat ribs, and there's not enough meat on them.
Yeah, so, that's like, fair.
They're down the board for me a little bit here, but yeah, pulled pork and brisket for sure. You know what? Something else too. I realize that maybe this isn't a purist's perspective on barbecue, but your sides can't suck. Like, you need to have a good mac and cheese. If you don't have a good mac and cheese, I don't trust you as a barbecue place.
That dude, that's as true a statement as anyone's gonna make on earth. The sides have to matter. I'm a big fried okra guy. I don't view this is the fattest thing probably anyone said in a while. But coming from me, it makes sense. I don't view coleslaw as a side. I view coleslaw as a condiment. So I hate having to pay for it as a side, but I believe a great barbecue sandwich has coleslaw on it. That is a very key ingredient for me.
While I'm not a coleslaw guy, I do tend to agree with this take, right? I mean, coleslaw is, to me, I agree. I think it is more of a condiment than a
cuts
side.
The fat. It's crunchy. The mayonnaise and
creamy. It's the texture difference.
But by the way, I'm also with you. We are in a minority, though. Like, we're going to have to defend this. We're going to be like Jon Snow, Battle of the Bastards, sword out, and everyone's coming for us. There's no doubt everyone is way more of a brisket snob than we are. I love brisket. My problem is I think it's easier to find good pulled pork than it is to find good brisket. Brisket is just harder to do. So if you're going to go to a barbecue restaurant, you're rolling the dice with their brisket. Odds are their pulled pork is going to be money.
See, I agree with that take. I think brisket is much more difficult to do, especially because brisket will dry out. Pulled pork, you put it in a mopping sauce or whatever else. I mean, that's not really going to dry out. And if you have dried pulled pork, I will walk out. I will finish what I'm eating.
No, I've recently become way more into the whole the vinegar-based barbecue, the Carolina barbecue. I am way into that, but do you have a preference on barbecue sauce? Not that mustard stuff from the Carolinas, though, right?
No, that's my wife is definitely the mustard-based sauce for sure. Really? She likes the vinegar-based sauce too.
Yeah,
you know, Michael Simon actually had a really good vinegar-based sauce that she liked, and his place here in Vegas, Mabel's over at the Palms, is actually pretty good. Hmm. But no, I'm a Kansas City barbecue sauce guy. I want a little bit of tang to it.
Little molasses, super sweet. Like thickness.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of like, you know, that. I'm definitely a red-based, you know, barbecue sauce fan for sure. I'm actually not a big vinegar guy, so you know that kind of makes it a little bit tough with some of the sauces that are out there. But yeah, I mean, you give me some, you know, a little bit of a tangy Kansas City barbecue sauce. And look, I mean, the thing of it is, when we travel, we sniff out barbecue places. Like, we will try barbecue in every part of the country, and you know, a lot of them do as good of a job as they can, and a lot of them are, you know, usually people that are transplants, so they come from somewhere else where, you know, maybe they know how to do barbecue a little bit better, a little bit differently. But it's one of our things, man. Breweries and barbecue spots.
I love, dude, we could do a whole podcast just on this. I freaking love barbecue. It became a passion of mine when I moved to the South in like 2003. But speaking of Kansas City, might as well touch on the Royals here real quick. I know they lost 2-3 to the Mets over the weekend. And in our community, which is the betting community, Adam, I was getting a little annoyed because I like their pitching. I think they made some really smart moves. Obviously, getting Cole Reagans a year ago from Texas, I want to discuss that with you. But Lugo, Waka, like, there's depth in this rotation, and I just think they're really solid across the board. But I think the hype was getting a little out of control last week. A lot of people, when it comes to betting, were yelling from the rooftops about how they had staying power. They're going to win the division. And they might. I'm not saying they're not going to win the division, but can we add a little context to what we were seeing? They won 2-3 with Minnesota, who lost Royce Lewis as soon as the season started. Then they played the White Sox for 4, which might be, I'm not even being hyperbolic here, Adam, one of the worst teams we've seen in like 10, 15 years without Robert Moncada right now. Then they swept the Astros, which I know on the surface feels right, but if go look on the IL for the Astros, their entire starting rotation is on the IL. That's who they beat. They didn't really beat the real Astros. And they just lost 2-3 to the Mets, who I think the Mets at best contend for that final wild card spot, but likely don't get it. That's where the Royals are this year. Is there anything you're seeing from them? I know you were thinking about getting in on them a week ago that leads you to believe that they are as good as everyone perceives?
Well, I think there's a few things at play here. The first is, outside of the World Series teams, you know, that went to back-to-back World Series, lost the first one, won the second one. Like, this has been a very, very bad baseball organization for a very long time. I mean, this is a team that they have, you can count on one hand the number of winning seasons that they have since the strike in 95. So this is a team that's been bad for a long time. People want to root for that kind of story. They want to believe in that kind of story. And look, I mean, to be fair, they have a legit superstar in Bobby Witt Jr.
Oh, watching him for the whole weekend, Adam, a lot of things are just effortless for that guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's an elite level player for sure. And, you know, they've got some other kind of interesting guys. But look, when they start to face better pitching, this is not a very good lineup. I mean, I like Vinny Pasquantino. And, you know, we'll see if the power comes back coming off of, you know, the shoulder injury last year. But for right now, I mean, he's a guy who's not driving the baseball at all. 34% hard hit rate, barrel percentage of 2.1%. League average is about 8.5%. So he's a guy in the middle of the order who's not barreling anything right now. So you're not really going to get a whole lot of run production out of that. Salvador Perez is a guy who's going to hit some home runs, but he's not going to hit for a high average because he's just, you know, he's not going to carry a 362 batting average on balls in play.
He's old.
All year long. Yeah, this is not a good offense. I mean, I think it's a little bit interesting, but it's not a good offense.
No consistent power. Like, no, they don't have a reliable guy. And the two guys you mentioned, Pasquantino has the potential to be that, but you don't want to have to rely on him right now. It's better if he's like your second or third best guy. And Salvador Perez, I freaking love him. He's one of my favorite players I've ever watched, but he's getting up there in age. And how much can you rely on him to you know, have that same level of power production?
Yeah, and look, you know, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, throughout the course of his career, I mean, he's hit home runs. You know, he's played well offensively at a position that typically doesn't have a whole lot of offensive upside. But, you know, he's not a guy. I mean, he's striking out only 17% of the time right now. That's not going to continue. He still doesn't walk. Right now, his offensive profile is driven by a lot of, you know, really positive luck, batted ball luck. That's not going to continue. I think the pitching is good. I think having guys like Seth Lugo and Michael Waka, you know, guys that are proven veterans, guys that can go out there and give you, you know, 6 respectable innings, keep you in the game. That's a massive upgrade over what they had last season. I mean, last season they were running out of a collection of stiffs. And, you know, Reagans obviously has, you know, star potential, which is kind of incredible what happened the second they got him from Texas. All of a sudden, the light came on. And I think Brady Singer is still pretty good, but he's also a two-pitch pitcher. That if both pitches aren't working and he becomes a one-pitch pitcher or less than that, then he's a guy who really does struggle. I don't think there's a lot of staying power for this team. That being said, this division is a joke.
Yeah.
Cleveland is not a very good team. I know that they're 10-5. They're off to a good start. They, too, have benefited from playing a weak schedule. They caught the Mariners at the right time. They played Oakland. Chicago blows, as we talked about already. Minnesota is, you know, I don't think Minnesota's all that good either. Detroit, they're fine.
I always think Minnesota stinks and they win the division every year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're a really well-run organization. They have a lot of guys who actually started with Cleveland in their front office. So they're a really, really smart organization. But, you know, again, I mean, Buxton's going to get hurt at some point.
Yeah.
That's just inevitable. They already have some guys, some pretty significant guys on the injured list. And the bullpen is kind of running on fumes right now with Duran still out and Justin Topa still out too. Yeah. You know, I mean, they probably get better as the season goes along. Cleveland should get better as the season goes along. When Kyle Manzardo comes up, Chase DeLauder, Juan Brito, I don't know what will happen on the pitching side. That's a concern right now. But, like, how does Kansas City get better? Like, to me, this feels like the peak of what the Royals are capable of. And they've played a really bad schedule to do that. They play Chicago this week. I'm sure they'll take 2 out of 3 at a minimum, something like that. But then they get Baltimore and Toronto, teams that can actually hit, teams that can actually pitch. I think that's where we kind of see Kansas City fall off the pace a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think they're a little, I think everyone's getting caught up right now. And by the way, Bobby Witt does have a chance for MVP, though. His number shortened up a ton over at DraftKings. But right now, they're to win the division, Kansas City's plus 475. I think they were 7-1 to open the year. I still like your Guardians at plus 225. I think when Gavin Williams comes back, providing his arms, you know, good to go, he steps in and he has the potential to be the ace of that staff. And I still think you have the best bullpen. You have the best rotation. And I think we underestimate how much that matters sometimes, especially in a division like this where everyone's kind of not that great. Being able to throw out some reliable quality arms, I think that's going to matter.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, I mean, look, to the point about Kansas City's schedule, I mean, from April 19th to May 8th, they don't play a team that currently has a record below 500. Baltimore, Toronto twice, Detroit, Texas, and Milwaukee, which what Milwaukee's doing offensively is a discussion, you know, unto itself here.
Let's talk about that. I'd love to talk about that because I'm blown away by this team. I expected such a massive fall off when you factor in what they lost a year ago, Adam. And I'm not just talking about Corbin Burns, and I'm not talking about Brandon Woodruff being out for the year. I'm talking about losing David Stearns, who put this whole thing together. And this offense has not stopped hitting. Thoroughly impressed with the way that side of things is carrying this organization right now. I never expected those words to come from my mouth.
Well, look, I mean, there's some batted ball luck involved here, too. I mean, there are several guys on this team with a batting average on balls in play of 400 or higher, including guys who play every day. You know, like a William Contreras, 436 BABIP, that's not sustainable.
Not as a catcher, especially.
Sal Frelick is 400. You know, Bryce Terang, 421. Like, this isn't going to continue. That being said, I mean, they're hitting for a lot more power than I expected them to. They're out there stealing bases. I mean, it almost kind of seems like There's a couple different things in play here, right? Like, one of them is a rallying cry against what Craig Counsell did, right? So they kind of banded together because there is a lot of homegrown talent on this roster, or at least, you know, guys that have kind of been around for a while within the organization. And you've sort of got that, you know, kind of mentality of everyone's just kind of rallying around each other. And, you know, they've been able to have some success in that respect. But also, again, I mean, they're getting pretty fortunate here with their batted ball outcomes. Now, their contact quality is up from where it was last season, and that's definitely an important thing, especially when you've got some young guys who are kind of coming into their own, playing every day, all that kind of thing. But guys like Willy Adames, I mean, I don't think he's going to continue, you know, what he's doing. Christian Yelich is already hurt. You know, he's already banged up. And William Contreras maybe is a dude. I mean, yeah. It was just one of those situations where the Braves just had too many guys and, you know, had to give somebody up, and it was Contreras, and maybe he will be, you know, a top 25, top 30 type of player in Major League Baseball, especially, again, at that catcher position where you don't really generate a whole lot of offense. But this is a team that has to hit a ton. because this rotation is Freddie Peralta, DL Hall, Colin Ray, Joe Ross, who I didn't even know was still around.
No, he hadn't pitched in a couple Wade years. Miley. He hadn't pitched in a
like,
couple
like
years.
You have to score six runs a game
that's
to really sustain with that kind of rotation.
No, that's totally fair. Contreras is a guy who just didn't have a position for, you know, to consistently play in Atlanta. They had too many catchers, and he rakes, man. When he's healthy, that dude smashes. So I like him. Dude, I'm a big Willy Adames guy. That guy could play for my team any day. I feel like good shortstop, run producer at the plate, has a good amount of pop for a middle infielder, but I just like his whole vibe. I thought him leaving Tampa Bay, I thought that was an issue for Tampa Bay trying to find a guy to replace his kind of attitude he brought to the clubhouse.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, they have a lot of swag right now. You know, I mean, they're a team that they haven't been afraid to go out there and mix it up. I know there have been a couple of incidents, you know, on the field where they just this is going to sound cliche. And as a data-driven, as a numbers guy, like these types of discussions are uncomfortable for me. They feel like a team. Like, yeah. Like they legitimately are feeding off of each other. They feel like a team. And the question becomes, when it's not all unicorns and rainbows, when you're not running a 341 BABIP as a team, like, then how does it go?
Yeah,
right? I mean, when you start to face some of that adversity and you get some of the finger pointing and, you know, you get some of the things that happen throughout the course of 162 game season, you know, then what? Then what kind of happens with this team? And again, I mean, I'll say this, you know, they played the Mets, who are not playing well, the Twins not playing well, Mariners not playing well, the Reds are fine. I don't really know what the Reds are. You know, they had some good weather days in Baltimore as well, where they faced some fly ball guys with the wind blowing out. Wind was a huge factor throughout Major League Baseball over the weekend. You know, now they play the Padres, a Padres team that is, you know, up and down, but very, very talented. Then, you know, they get into some NL Central play, St. Louis and Pittsburgh. You know, I mean, that series against Pittsburgh is going to be fascinating because these are two teams that are definitely overperforming at this point in time.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be curious to see how that four gamer goes at PNC next week.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, because something happened and I happened to watch a video on it later. Andrew McCutchen hit his 300th home run yesterday and a young fan caught the ball. And him and his father were brought into the clubhouse, which as a kid, I can't imagine anything cooler than getting to see a major league clubhouse in person. Like that to me was the dream as a kid. Like it's so freaking cool. And the kid and the dad come back there and Andrew signs a bat for him. And because Andrew McCutchen just seems like one of the great guys in the history of baseball. Just freaking love that guy. My question for you, Adam Burke, if you caught a home run ball that a player wanted back, well, first, have you ever caught a ball at a game?
I have, actually. I have the clip bookmarked, actually, still.
Really?
It was a Mark Reynolds home run.
He hit a few.
This was a sky ball. So, you know, I'm actually surprised. I have one off a ricochet, one that I've caught. And, you know, we stood on the home run porch in left field. For anybody who's been to the ballpark in Cleveland, Progressive Field / Jacobs Field, if you still call it that. You know, we were season ticket holders. We stood on the home run porch a lot, but we were right on the railing. So you would typically get a lot of home runs that came over the top of us, or the ones that were shorter were kind of closer to the foul pole. I don't know. It's maybe, I would say maybe 100 feet, give or take, from where we stood to where the foul pole is. So there was some room there, definitely. But yeah, I caught a Mark Reynolds home run, went over to the players' parking lot after the game. You get a certificate when you catch it on the fly at Progressive Field.
Oh, you caught it on the fly. That's a humble
I caught it on
brag.
The fly.
That's
yeah.
a humble brag. I appreciate
so,
it.
So he signed the certificate and also sweet spotted the baseball for me. That was 2011.
He didn't want the ball back.
No. He had definitely hit more than 2013. He had hit, like you said, quite a few.
298 in his career. Honestly,
Joe Saunders,
lefty.
Yep. Yeah, Mark Reynolds feasted on lefties.
Yeah, dude, that guy was, by the way, he would probably come on this podcast. He is a great media guy. Like, he doesn't work in media, but he's a great interview. Maybe we talk to him around the Home Run Derby because I know he competed in a couple of those, but he has great insight, played all over. When you're a guy like that, and look, he had great power. He played on some really good teams, and he played in a bunch of different organizations. To your point about the Brewers, you just have to be a likable guy, too. organizations have to pursue you and want you. And that's the vibe I get from Mark Reynolds. All right. So you caught a home run ball. See, I never caught a home run ball. Lenny Harris, one of the greatest pinch hitters of all time for the Mets at the Subway Series game one, 2000 Mets Yankees. He handed me a ball, tried to hand me a second one, and everyone started yelling. Also, sidebar, at that game, I heard the greatest quote from a player to a fan getting heckled of all time. Mike Hampton was standing there. Mike Hampton was like 5'9", and this Yankee fan was just abusing him for how short he was. And after about like 20 minutes of it, Hampton turned around finally and was like, "Hey, bud, I'm a lot taller when I'm standing on my wallet." And everyone shut up real fast because Hampton had made a lot of money at that point. But Lenny Harris gave me a ball. Then a couple years later, JT Snow on the way in after making the last out of an inning, he had the ball in his glove and I yelled his name. He threw the ball to me and I caught it. So that was it. I've never caught a home run ball. But so my question would be, if you caught a historic home run ball, whatever, it could be a big one in terms of baseball history or the player's history, like McCutchen hitting his 300th, how would you negotiate that? What would be your plan for giving the ball back?
So I'm not holding anybody hostage. That's just not me. That's not my character. I'm not going to do anything like that and, you know, threaten selling the ball or whatever else. It kind of depends, but on the whole, it would just be, I want to hand the ball to the player personally, especially if it's a first home run ball. Like, that's a super cool moment that I somehow get fortunate to be a part of. Like, I just, you know, want a picture, congratulate him, because I'll never hit a major league home run. Like, you know, to be able to have anything to do with that type of thing would be really, really cool. So I would just want to personally be able to deliver the ball. That would be the only thing for me.
You know what? You're a better person than me. If it was someone's first home run ball, all I'd want them is to sign another ball for me, like a brand new ball, sign it. We'll do a swap. That's all I care about. But if it's like a historic one in terms of like Cooperstown, you know, I remember my buddy worked with the guy who caught Jeter's, was Jeter's 3000th hit a home run? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, okay. The guy caught it. He worked with my buddy. And I was like, man, that's what I want. Cause I would hold that baby hostage. We're taking the highest bidder at that point because I'm going to earn off one. I probably sat in those seats for a reason, knowing it was possible. And I want to capitalize here. So if he doesn't want to pay me for it, we're going to put it to auction. Like, I'll never forget the home run chase with Sosa and McGuire and be like, man, I wish like there was a possibility this would happen at Shea Stadium or Yankee Stadium so I could go and sit in the outfield. Although at Shea Stadium, there's only one spot in left field where you could really sit and catch a ball. And it was pretty far out there. But yeah, I would definitely do that. I think my move though would be, I just want some signed stuff, signed jersey, signed batting gloves, signed bat, whatever it is, depending on like how established that player is. I'm not trying to cost a rookie a ton of money.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I completely understand that. I mean, you know, so speaking of Mark McGuire, so when I was a kid and the Cardinals came to Cleveland, because, you know, I mean, Interleague was, you know, just kind of starting to be a thing, you know, a few years before that. So I go to the game with my dad, and so in Cleveland, they don't let you, well, now they let you in for both teams' batting practices, but back then they would only let you in for the road team because, you know, you're getting closer to first pitch and all that kind of thing. So my dad played a lot of softball. He was actually a really good softball player, you know, playing for the Steelworkers local and all that kind of thing. But he had this giant ass glove, which I have now, this gigantic glove. This thing's like a bushel basket kind of thing, right? So we're out there on the home run porch during batting practice, and McGuire is just, I mean, he's putting on a show, right? I mean, he's roided up like crazy. You know, he's just putting on a show. So my dad catches a batting practice home run for Mark McGuire, right? So we're going to the game. I don't know if it was the next day or if there was a game in between, but we went down to the first baseline, and McGuire was signing some autographs. And my dad, big dude, 6'3", 285, 290, like big guy, right? So he's kind of, you know, I'm not saying he's pushing children out of the way, but he's making sure that, you know, he's kind of reaching the ball out a little bit farther. And, you know, he says, "Hey, you know, Mr. McGuire, you know, I caught this during batting practice yesterday. I'd love it if you sign it." And McGuire goes, "Yeah, sure." And moves on. Doesn't sign. Just goes, "Yeah, I bet you did." Moves on. So my dad slides down a little bit more, says again, "Hey, Mr. McGuire, you know, I caught this during batting practice yesterday. I'd love it if you could sign it for my son." So McGuire signs it, right? So he doesn't sweet spot it, but he signs it. Still have the ball. So we go back out there for batting practice because McGuire signed before he hit. And then my dad caught another one from McGuire during batting practice that next game we were at.
Caught another one?
Yeah. Of course, they were both batting practice. Well, you know, not like a, you know, game scenario, but still.
No, but kids don't remember. Kids will not remember this. Getting there early to watch Mark McGuire roided up swing in batting practice was actually better than games because everything he was hitting was going out. Like it was, I remember specifically watching him at Shea Stadium take batting practice, and everything was just absolute bombs. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was quite a show. It was definitely fun to watch for sure.
Adam Dunn was the best batting practice hitter I've ever watched.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean he definitely, you know, I mean when you're a three true outcomes guy like that where, you know, when you make contact, you're just trying to hit the ball out cuz you're walking 20% of the time and striking out 35% of the time. Yeah, that's what you're looking. You're not going oppo in batting practice. Like if you're Adam.
No, you're not going to bother. No. There's no point in that. All right. Well, shoot. That was a fun episode, dude. We covered a lot of ground. We definitely analyzed barbecue. I think that might need to be a continuing bit on the show where we analyze barbecue. Maybe next week we rank our sides. Top five sides from each of us when it comes to barbecue. Look, baseball is one thing. The barbecue is a whole different thing when it comes to taking something seriously. So let's end it there. We'll be back Thursday. Episodes drop every Monday, every Thursday. For Adam Burke, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. This has been a Double Play Podcast, a baseball podcast.